On She'll Kill, we pair a crypto with a riveting true crime case, weaving together the worlds of innovation and investigation. Today, we shed light on a groundbreaking project before delving into a dark mystery. Stay curious and ready for more.
Hey, welcome to She'll Kill. I'm Chip Mahoney, and today's episode, it's all about how not to be trapped in crypto and in the back of a stranger's cab. Now, in the true crime case I have for you today, it's over 30 years old, so really we're talking about a taxi cab, what we like to call an Uber today. So I will get into that. And with the crypto, how do you not get trapped when Bitcoin is closing in on 100,000? Because once that happens, there's going to be a lot of FOMO out there, people rushing to the exchanges, a lot of shiny objects. How do you pick the right one? Well, I've got that for you today and a lot more. So thanks for tuning in. This is the audio version, but if you like video, there's YouTube, there's TikTok and whatnot. So another reason to subscribe, come back for more, because I will have more for you just about every new week. A new crypto review paired with a true crime case, often a real mystery like I like to do here at She'll Kill, because I'm into the unique stuff, and maybe you are too, and that's why you're here. So a real reason to come back, because this show is for people who love true crime, but also curious about crypto. Want to learn about crypto, new adopter of crypto, bull runs coming, you don't want to miss out, and you got to learn this stuff. And that's what I have here for you today. But if you know anyone else like yourself who loves true crime, wants to learn about crypto in a non-technical way, and doesn't want to miss out either, I appreciate you sharing the podcast, coming back for more, because I will always have more for you and anyone you want to recommend. If you have heard me before, and it wasn't just a drive-by, as I like to say, you're dropping the clip, pulling the crossover SUV back around on me, know that I do appreciate that OG kind of respect. Although I am a DeFi expert, I promise not to fire back on you with a bunch of technical jargon I know you don't need. You just need to know enough to make sound decisions one way or the other. So the thing about crypto is just not to miss out on the opportunity available to you, and don't miss out what I have for you next about Celestia. Celestia, ticker symbol TIA, is a top crypto project. If you head on over to CoinMarketCap, you will find it in the top 100 of all cryptos. It sits right there in the middle at number 50 or so at the time of this recording. It hasn't been around for a long time, so it's rather impressive that's there in the top 100. But is it just a shiny object and nothing else? Does it have something to offer? We're going to talk about that. It trades right now at about $13 a share at the time of this recording. And if you're here in the United States, you can easily get it on Coinbase and Kraken. So rather easy to acquire for somebody new to crypto, because those are just like crypto banks. You log in, create an account, and just go through the process there. So rather easy to add to your bag. But do you want to do that? What is it? And like I said, is it just a shiny object? Because when Bitcoin goes full FOMO, reaches 100,000, and people on the street are talking about it, in the office, at the cafes, Bitcoin, 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 then that means a ton of people, new people, are going to rush onto the exchanges for the first time. And if they're doing that, they're going to run into a lot of traps. I call them sex traps, not SEX, but CEX, centralized exchanges. And there's a lot of traps there. There's a lot of landmines. There's a lot of shiny objects to watch out for. Celestia is definitely a shiny object, but it does have a lot of value, it looks like, and you might want to invest in it after you do your own research. So if you do go to CoinMarketCap, you can click on their information, go to their website, and you'll see a bunch of good stuff there to read. But what is it? How do you break it down to, you know, choose this over something else? Because if you do rush onto the exchange for a first time when Bitcoin's at 100,000, you might look at that price tag and go, How am I going to invest in Bitcoin at 100,000? I've always suggested that you would want to do 1% a month or half of 1% of Bitcoin per month with a goal to get to, let's say, 0.21 Bitcoin. Because with Bitcoin, there's a max supply of 21 million. So it does make sense to do that. You might not be able to do that, but that's how you want to think about it, at least for somebody who's new. Brand new to crypto, I always recommend that approach. But when you're on there for the first time and there's a bunch of shiny objects, full FOMO, then it's going to be rather enticing to pick something like TIA or some of the other shiny objects on the website, because those are set not so much as a trap for you, but they're there for the business itself. I mean, they're there to benefit Coinbase and the exchanges. It's their business. It's not yours. So if you pick the right one, you can do well. If you pick the wrong one, it doesn't matter because they're still going to do well. But you got to pick the right ones and also the ones you believe in as well. So you might like Celestia because it is a blockchain and their website says that using their system or using their blockchain, which is a modular one, that anyone can create a blockchain. You can run it just like you would run a smart contract. So, you know, breaking that down a little bit, that just means that you don't have to code a lot. You can just kind of create something out of the box, run your own blockchain. And that sounds great. It sounds interesting. But here's where I kind of divert from that. The world doesn't need another blockchain. It simply doesn't need another blockchain. And that sounds kind of weird for somebody in crypto, but that just means that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of blockchains right now. There's just too many of them. And blockchains remind me of search engines 20 years ago. 20, 25 years ago, we had hundreds, if not thousands, of search engines that people actually used. And then there was Google in there, somewhere in there. Fast forward in the future, 20 plus years, and it's only Google. No one says they Yahooed anything. Nobody says they did anything with Bing. They would be embarrassed to do that. Just Google, 95%. So therefore, I kind of see blockchains that way, kind of, you know, being consolidated or going sideways, going out of business. So creating a blockchain, making it as easy as a smart contract, low code, that's great. But is it necessary? Because in my opinion, the world doesn't need another blockchain. It just doesn't. But it is interesting what they've created in a modular sense where a blockchain would typically want to do everything from the execution to the consensus and the settlement. But with a modular system, it's kind of like taking one of those big blocks and having dozens, maybe even a hundred or thousands of mini blocks within one block. And therefore, you can read data without downloading massive amounts of data. So it's more efficient. It makes more sense. It is pretty cool, in my opinion. But is it really necessary? And that's where I get stuck. And that's where I kind of think that if you're looking at it as a shiny object, you also have to think about it staying around for the long term. Bitcoin is going to be there forever. It's the reason why we have crypto. So will Celestia or any other project on Coinbase be around in 5-10 years or so? Will it be consolidated? Will it go out of business? Will it change names? We'll do what banks do and just eat up other banks and change their name every month. That stuff happens. So I think you have to, or anyone new to crypto would have to be diligent with knowing that the reason why they're on their exchange is because they have FOMO. Everybody's talking about it. They're excited. Bitcoin has a high price over 100,000. What are you going to do? And there's all these other green candles on these projects. And something like Celestia sticks out. Just be, savvy in your thinking, do your own research. And if you really like what they do, the modular approach, anyone can launch their own blockchain. They can run as quickly as a smart contract, low code environment, beginners. Sounds great. If you like that, then go ahead and invest in it. It could double. It could 5X on a CEX. And again, it's CEX, centralized exchange. But on those CEXes, the Coinbases and the Krakens, there are some traps, some landmines, and they're there to get new people to look at those green candles, buy into it at a high price that they think's a low price, and then they're going to get the rug pulled out from under. It's not a rug project. It's just that they're not going to get that return that they're looking for, because it's the exchange's business, and not every one of those 150 projects or so that they list there is going to 10x or 20x. A handful of them will, but there's a bunch of other shiny objects. So I would say it in my own opinion that it's a good project. I like what they do. I like the modular approach. However, the world doesn't need another blockchain. And I personally see them as search engines 20 years ago. Do we have 500, 1,000 or more search engines that we all use and we all talk about? No, we don't at all. The world changes, and in crypto and Web3, it changes really fast. It took 10 years or so, maybe 5 years, 10 years or so, for people to know what Google was. And in crypto, it's going to happen a lot faster. So keep that in mind. This is a good project, but you know, it did start off around $2 or so. Now it's around $13. Can it double? Yeah, it certainly could do that. Could it go to $50? It certainly could do that. But it also could take your money rather quickly if you have FOMO going on the exchange. So don't have FOMO. Have more of a sound approach when you go into the exchange for the first time, because that's what I'm assuming you are as a listener right now. That's your kind of first time in crypto, and maybe you haven't gone on the exchanges just yet. Bunch of shiny objects. Some of them are good. Celestia looks like a pretty good one. But again, do your own research, make your own decision, and go from there. So now as I go to the true crime, I talked about being trapped on an exchange, going there with shiny object syndrome and FOMO. But in this true crime case with Mia Zapata, this rock star from 30 years ago in Seattle that was on the cusp of breaking through in her career, a great singer, a great leader of a grunge band, or just really an original kind of approach to her music, her life was ended in the back of a taxi cab. She was trapped back there by her attacker, and it took 10 years to track this guy down. She was trapped. So I'm going to talk about that next, how not to be trapped in the future, when I talk about the case of Mia Zapata, a real tragic one. Mia Zapata's music career was just beginning to take off in 1993. Sort of like these crypto projects where they start off small and then they go to the moon. That was her at that time of her life. Her music, her band called The Gits, and the scene there in Seattle accepting her and really reveling in her music. She had brought her band to the Seattle area in the late 80s, and within a year or two, they just started making traction and making a name for themselves. Really original music within the grunge type of music. Some have said she's like the female Eddie Vedder. I just think that she was her own person, and she was a very attractive person that way. As dirty as she looked, she was really beautiful. Mia Zapata was her name, and she was killed in the early hours of July 7th, 1993, on the cusp of breaking through in her music career. So she was murdered on that night. She was 27 years old. She was in the Capitol Hill area of Seattle. taking one of a couple different ways home. There was a couple routes that investigators said that she probably took at about 2 a.m. after visiting with a friend briefly in that area. And so she was walking home. Maybe she was taking the long route, but she had those headphones on, not the AirPods that we use today that are all stylish and everything. These were the ones that were over your head and had like big fuzzy mittens around your ears or so that could keep them warm at night, even on the coldest morning as well. And that's how I think she was, or that's how I picture her, being lost in her music and her life and everything going so well, being on the cusp, about to go to the moon. But evil was lurking in the shadows in the dingy dark streets of Seattle, and it crept in and it got close to her. She was all alone, but he was there. He was lurking in the shadows. Now, investigators say that she could have been attacked from behind, that the person was on his feet, came up behind her, dragged her away to an alley somewhere. I think that her attacker was driving a taxi cab. I've heard those reports before, and I'm going to tell you why I think that in a minute here, but I think the taxi came up behind her to the side of her and offered her a ride. And she accepted and got in the back seat because that's the kind of person she was. She kind of had full command of her life, the area, the people. She could live on either side of the street. On one side of the street where it's dark and dingy, on the other side where the flowers grow, because she came from a privileged life and background, but she mixed with a lot of different people. She was a unique person that was very attractive. And so I think the person offered her a ride, the cab driver, and maybe she was taking the long way home and didn't think much of it. But that's where I think he trapped her in the back seat of the car, and that's where I think he attacked her, because the bruises on her body, the way the examiner had said that she would have died from her beating if she hadn't died from the strangling that had taken place. Because in that close proximity, that's where I think that he got the most shots on her, as he lurched over the seat to get in the back seat and beat on her and then assault her, sexually assault her. So she was strangled and her body was bruised and liver lacerated, just a terrible beating. And even the examiner said that they didn't know who it was until she recognized her from knowing her from seeing her perform at a show. She was a fan of Mia Zapata and the Gits. So that's how I think it was in that close proximity, because 10 years later, when they got this guy in court, when they finally figured out who this guy was, they got to see the size of this man in person. He was huge. His hands were huge, his body big and strong. And Mia wasn't a small person. She could take care of herself. And that's why I think that she was out on the street at 2 a.m. that night. She knew the area. She knew the people. She could live on either side of the street. She felt comfortable. She was at the cusp of everything. But evil does what it does. And this guy was like the evil coming out of the shadows. But when they saw him in court, they saw how big he was, how big her hands were. They knew that she didn't have a chance. And that's why I think that she wasn't attacked outside the cab, because I think those beatings or those lacerations would be a lot less than they were. I don't think she would have died from that. I think she would need to be strangled on the ground. She could have dodged some of that stuff. But in that close proximity, that's where I think he got her. That's where I think he trapped her. Now, this man was a cab driver. That's what he did for his profession. And in 1993, whether a few weeks or a few months prior to this event, he had exposed himself to another person, and there was a report about it. There was no way to match up with what happened to Mia, but he had something on record. After attacking Mia, they had his DNA from a bite mark on her, on the saliva DNA. There was no hit on CODIS, but about 9 years later, there was a hit that came up in Florida in 2002 because this man had an assault charge there, and they took his DNA, and that's where they got the hit on CODIS, and that's where they found out who this guy was. His name, Jesus Mesquia, a very big, evil man. And like I said, they didn't know the magnitude of what Mia was up against until they saw him in court, 2003, where they could see the size of this man. And they could see his hands in person, and they could see the evil in front of him, in front of them, in front of the audience, in front of the judge. So her friends and family knew instinctively, hey, she had no chance. But outside that cab, I think she would have had less of those lacerations because it was awful what she went through. Ultimately, she died of strangulation, but she could have died from the beating as well. It was that bad. It's that close proximity and how he trapped her. So Jesus Mesquia, this man just a few years ago passed away in jail. So there is no more to that story, but his story started out in Cuba because, as a side note to this tragic event, he was part of the 1980 Muriel boat lift, which was a famous thing or an infamous thing that Castro had done in Cuba, where he shipped out some of the worst people in Cuba, I think from the jails. The worst people he could find, put them on boats and just put them out to sea. And then they ended up drifting over to Florida, and then Florida accepted them into camps to start with. And then they integrated into Florida. Within a year or two, Florida became the crime capital of the United States, featured on Time Magazine, the Cocaine Cowboys. And that was the, really the genesis of the Miami Vice era, because there was so much crime. So this guy made it to Florida. I don't know if he was part of that crime wave, but he was 25 years old at that time, and then made it across the country to Seattle somehow. And at a certain point in his taxi cab, or maybe outside of it, he came upon another person prior to Mia, and exposed himself. And there's how he was on record, quote unquote, but no way to get him off the street. So he was patrolling the streets, he was lurking the streets, working a job, and maybe committing other assaults as well that they could never match up, I don't know. But that's where he intersected, where that evil intersected with that beauty. Because she was a beautiful person. As grungy as she looked, she was beautiful. Beautiful voice, original style, original music. You don't even have to like grunge to appreciate her music. It's that good. So she was on the cusp, and this guy snuffed it out. He did die a few years ago, so there's an end to that story. But with Mia, her music goes on. However, this story does remind me of something that happened within the last 5 years. 2019, South Houston, a young girl out for a night in the party district there. And she calls an Uber, and a guy who is out to kill somebody is lurking in the shadows. The evil person pretends he's the Uber, so he pulls up to where she's waiting for her Uber, and she doesn't have a way to check that it's legit. Nowadays with an Uber, it matches up the face and license plate, but in 2019, it didn't do that. He saw her standing there with her phone waiting for the Uber. He pulled up in his car, got her in the car, and hit the child locks. And within 20 minutes, within 30 minutes, she had over 120 knife wounds into her body. He trapped her into the back seat. He lurked into the back seat with a knife and took out all the blood of her body. She didn't have any blood left. It was that bad. For some unknown reason, this attacker did that. So in 1993, it was a taxi, and in the modern days, we called an Uber, but it's the same thing. It's a stranger picking you up and trapping you in their back seat, at least for the time being. 99% of the time, they let you go because they're doing their job. But this is where that evil occurred again. It reminds me of the Mia case. And Samantha, after 120, they lost count. She didn't have any blood left. But after that was said and done, they did create a law. I think it's called Sammy's Law, which helps in these cases. But it's where they put the inherent trust, or we all kind of put the inherent trust in a taxi driver or an Uber driver. and assume that everything's going to go right. So therefore, I think in the case of Mia, that she was at the height of what she was doing, at the cusp. She had everything going for her. She had her music playing. She was thinking about the song. She was writing the new songs in her head. She was on top of the world, going to the moon. And this guy offered her a ride, and she thought nothing of it. But within a minute or two, it turned really ugly, and she was caught way off guard. And with the sheer size of this man, with his background, and what he was capable of doing, she had no chance. So I hope today in this episode you've liked this pairing with Tia and Mia, and you've learned something here, and you'll come back for more, because I will always have more for you. But on this episode, I'm out. Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe and join us again as we uncover the fascinating connection between two seemingly disparate worlds. Until next time.